Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19, chapters entitled The Island of Jambudvip, text number 14. Yat yai hi kamus mika kama lampata Suteshu dareshu daneshu chintaihan Sanketa vidvanku kalevaratyayad Yastasya yatnam srama eva kevalham Yes. Translation. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Materialists are generally very attached to the present bodily comforts, and to the bodily comforts they expect in the future. Therefore, they are always absorbed in thoughts of their wives, children, and wealth, and are afraid of giving up their bodies, which are full of stool and urine. If a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, however, is also afraid of giving up his body, what is the use of his having labor to study the Shastras? It is simply a waste of time. Purport. At the time of death, a materialist thinks of his wife and children. He is absorbed in thinking of how they will live and who will take care of them after he leaves. Consequently, he is never prepared to give up his body. Rather, he wants to continue to live in his body to serve his society, family, friends, and so on. Therefore, by practicing the mystic yoga system, one must become detached from bodily relationships. If despite practicing bhakti yoga and by studying all Vedic literature, one is afraid of giving up his bad body, which is the cause of all his suffering, what is the use of his attempt to advance in spiritual life? The secret of success in practicing yoga is to become free from bodily attachments. Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Deha smritya naha yara samsara bandhana kahan tara. One whose practice has freed him from the anxiety of bodily needs is no longer in conditional life. Such a person is free from conditional bondage. A person in Krishna consciousness must fully discharge his devotional duties without material attachment. Then his liberation is guaranteed. Translation once again. So the purpose of human life is to go back home, back to Godhead. Purpose of human life is not to somehow or other make a nice arrangement to enjoy in this material world. Because this material world is described in so many places throughout the scriptures as tukalayam sasratam. It's temporary, it's miserable. It's a form of punishment to come to this material world. It's not our home. The soul lives in the spiritual world in eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But somehow or other, due to an inordinate desire, one falls from that state of perfection into what is called the state of illusion. And in that state of illusion, one tries to create a reality based on that illusion. That is called this material life. So the soul has nothing to do with this material world. But in order to live in this material world, one takes on many activities in order to support the needs of the body, the needs of the bodily relationships, so many things. And life after life after life, this continues to, what we say, accumulate around the soul's pure spiritual essence. And these are called coverings, material coverings. And through these material coverings, more and more deeper identifications with the body continue to thicken. That it becomes so strong that one's spiritual essence, which is one's actual identity, is actually so far removed from one's awareness that it seems to be the illusion. And the bodily conception of life, or the material world, but all the one's activities seems to be the reality, or the most important part of one's existence. And therefore, one remains in this cycle of birth and death, simply taking on bodies. Karanam guna sanga sosarasa joni dhyanvasu, in different species of life, in different situations throughout the universe. Life after life after life after life in this illusion. Somehow, by the mercy of one's good fortune, one comes in contact with a liberated person and takes shelter and begins the process of devotional service. And this is a great fortune for the living entity to come to that, because actually then one can make a solution to all problems of life. And then one practices the process of bhakti yoga. And here it explains that one practices the bhakti yoga to become detached from all the attachments that have been accumulated from so many lifetimes. A conditioned soul is called nitya bada. Bada means bondage, and nitya means eternal. So, but we understand from scripture that the soul is by nature Krishna's eternal servant in the spiritual world. So how can the soul be considered to be eternally conditioned? Well, the scriptures use that particular statement to say that one cannot trace out one's existence in this material world because it's so deep and so many, many lifetimes. I mean, Prabhupada would say millions of lifetimes. Even to come to the human form of life takes hundreds and thousands, maybe even millions of lifetimes. So you can manage in the nature of conditioning. But the process of bhakti yoga is very powerful. And gradually, through executing the process carefully under the direction of the spiritual master, by following his instructions, by understanding the process, by understanding what to do and what not to do, and developing the qualities that are conducive for, what we say, execution of the process effectively, which means qualities that are of the mode of goodness, such as humility, tolerance, patience, determination, cleanliness, truthfulness, simplicity, freedom from attachment to material things, freedom from finding fault with others. So many necessary qualities that are supportive and are actually the essence of bhakti. And one cultivates them in connection with one's practical activities in devotional service, one is meant to become detached, or one become free from all this accumulation of material attachments and material desires and material affections that have been there life after life. But here it says that if one is engaged in the process of bhakti yoga and studies hard the scriptures, laboring to study the scriptures, but still is afraid to give up their, as Prabhupada uses the word, bad body in the purport. Bad means, could be different meanings. Bad means something that leads us in the wrong direction, or something that is very undesirable just by its essence. We could say bad means in that both ways. Then one really has labored uselessly. Shrama Evahi Kevalam. This is mentioned also in the first canto, that, you know, if one engages in devotional service, but doesn't cultivate one's relationship with Krishna, and simply performs the activity for other reasons, then it's all simply a useless waste of time. And what is the study of the scriptures meant to do? I mean, many people study the scriptures in order to somehow or other enjoy knowledge. Because knowledge is a feature of enjoyment also. Just like there is pleasure in the senses, and there's pleasure in the mind, there's pleasure in the intelligence, and there's also pleasure in the soul. So the type of mental pleasure also is accumulation and to delight in knowledge. But that's not the purpose of studying the scriptures. The studying of the scriptures is meant to help us become detached. It's meant to bring about a sense of detachment. Detachment from what? From sense gratification. Detachment from what? From the bodily conception of life. And so if one is not developing renunciation based on their knowledge, because knowledge is meant to help us become renounced. The whole process of bhakti yoga, really, this path that we're following is our pantha, or our path is vairagya. This is the vairagya path. It's not the path of somehow or other doing some devotion to the Lord and somehow or other supporting the benefits we get from that devotion to support our material life, to make it better. It's called, what is it called? Naimittika bhakta. Naimittika activities. These activities that one worships the Lord in order to make a better arrangement in this material world. It's not the purpose of devotional service. And many people approach the Lord, most people, not many, most people approach the Lord in order for some relief or to make a better arrangement. But that will simply lead one again into the cycle of birth and death. So the study of this, Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, with the weapon of knowledge, cut through this illusion. What is this illusion? This attachment to the body. We saw my practical example, our very dear God brother and friend, Stoka Krishna. Very simple. He wasn't very, what we say, erudite in the scriptures. Last night we had a very, very beautiful ceremony. So many devotees spoke so heartfelt appreciation and wonderful stories of their relationship and the qualities of this very, very, very simple but very, very determined devotee to serve the Lord and to please his spiritual master. And how by that determined effort and by pleasing the Lord and pleasing his spiritual master, he developed attachment. He was detached. When he left his body, he was detached. But he was not a great scholar of Vedic literature, although he had knowledge. But he understood what is the purpose of knowledge. The under purpose of knowledge is to develop attachment to Krishna and detachment to this body. So that is the process of bhakti yoga. And that is the perfect example. We have the example here before our eyes in such a powerful and such a wonderful way. So this is the importance of practicing Krishna consciousness. Now, as we practice Krishna consciousness and engage in devotional service, Krishna gives the devotee so many, what we say, facilities to execute their devotional service. He may give position, he may also give wealth, he also may give facilities for material arrangements. But if one accepts these, not in the spirit of renunciation, but in the spirit of enjoyment, or in the spirit of seeing these things as, you know, something that is necessary, because we don't need, the soul doesn't need anything. We can use everything, but the soul doesn't need anything. I mean, there are many processes of spiritual elevation that when people practice, they want to give up everything. Mayavadis or the impersonalists, or even many other, what we say, paths of bhakti that are on a lower level of bhakti, they accept that to have material things is contrary to one's spiritual consciousness or spiritual development. But we don't say it's not the having of the material things, it's the attachment to them. It's the attachment to them. But it's difficult when you have something and you're at the same time have to be detached from it. It's easier not to have it because there's no attachment because you don't have it. Unless you strive to get it. But when you have it, you can develop an attachment for these things. But one has to see everything in relationship to the Lord. My home, grihastha, wife, children, family, everything. Even one's personal possessions that one may use as a brahmacharya in their outside of life, these simply are just facilities or items to be used in the service of the Lord. But my real wealth is bhakti. Bhakti is the real wealth. Bhakti is the real treasure, not the extensions that come in this material world in the form of so many interactions with so many different living entities and, of course, our material things. So the scriptures say, what is the use of studying the scriptures? The acharyas say, what is the use of studying the scriptures if one simply cannot give up their body at the time of death? Nishrama eva hi kevalam. It's a useless waste of time. And there are many people who have great scriptural knowledge. Sometimes Prabhupada would speak about persons who have in the brahminical life, who are great Brahmins. But what are they doing? They're simply doing menial labor in order to facilitate the needs of their body. There's no detachment. They work very hard simply to accumulate more and more material things. So it's all external. But Narottam Das Thakur says, one whose practice has freed him from the anxiety of bodily need is no longer in conditional life. Although one may be surrounded by everything, still one is not, what we say, implicated by one's attachments. So this is actually the process. But it's very difficult. We see in our society, you know, as preaching goes on, as so many programs and facilities develop, Krishna sends so many things. And then pretty soon, there's so much opulence. Sometimes people say it was nice in the early days of Krishna consciousness because it was so simple. In other words, Prabhupada, everyone slept on the floor, and whatever material situations you had to accept. And that was all there is. And it was very sweet and very simple. And that's Krishna consciousness. But this is a preaching movement. So this preaching movement means that Krishna is going to send big buildings, a lot of money, a lot of followers, a lot of facilities, a lot of arrangements, material comforts. Why? For preaching. For preaching. Not to get more and more comfortable and not to get more and more attached to these things. So it's difficult to be in that situation at the same time. But what is the formula? Attachment to Krishna. Because no one can detach themselves from material things unless they're attached to Krishna. So we develop our attachment to Krishna. So knowledge simply means to understand our relationship with Krishna. Cultivation of knowledge is to understand our relationship with Krishna and detachment from material life. And we have to leave this body anyway. What does this body have to do with, what do we have to do with anything in this material world? Whatever value we place on anything in this material world is simply due to our mental concoctions. A person's values, or what we say, attachments, are simply due to association with the material energy. As we reassociate with that material energy in another way, we lose certain attachments, and we develop attachments for something else. I mean, one becomes so attached to one's wife or family members, and sometimes calamities develop. And what happens? One becomes detached from that whole situation. So attachment and detachment are two features of the same thing. It is the material life. And it simply causes more and more bondage. So attachment to Krishna, detachment to detachment from material life. So it's a very powerful verse. And we can learn from the example of others. I remember when Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami was in his last few months of struggling with his cancer, but at the same time he was preaching very strongly, using his life as an example to help devotees understand what it means to leave the body. And I remember towards the end, he was speaking about removing himself from the association of devotees and going more into a more of a nirjan bhajan, getting away from, you know, active preaching. And this is, of course, in line with our acharyas. And he explains that, he was explaining, I have to get rid of this idea that I'm Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Because so many people see me as Bhakti Tirtha Swami, the spiritual master, the author of so many books, whatever else that people see him as. These are all forms of designations that we also take on, even in spiritual life. Guru, or sannyas, or whatever role we play in our service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and whatever labels come with that role, one can also identify with that. So I remember Maharaj was just saying, I have to leave all that behind and come back to who I really am, eternal Krishna's eternal servant in the spiritual world. Well, that is ultimate detachment. And in that last few weeks of his stay with us in here and this planet, he was so much absorbed in the internal mood, and that's necessary. Same with Stoka Krishna Prabhu. Although he was surrounded by so many living beings, so many friends and relatives and well-wishers and so many things, he was detached. He had no idea. I remember last night, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was speaking so sweetly and so devotionally and with so much depth of knowledge about the relationship with Stoka Krishna. At one point he said, when I was with him, I realized that he had no more material attachments. I realized in my heart that he had no more attachment to this material world, he said. And when Maharaj said that, I got a realization, yeah. It was like it hit me so hard that yes, this simple, very humble devotee of the Lord, he was completely free from everything. It's the power of bhakti yoga. But material attachments are not easy to give up, and one has to practice while we're still going through the process of leaving the body. Because we're leaving the body every second. The body is going down. It's always going down. It's getting older, it's breaking down, it's becoming closer and closer. What does the scripture say? We're both with the rising and the setting of the sun. Another day is lost and one is one day closer to death. But then again, it goes on and gives the formula for those engaged in devotional service, except for one who hears the glories of the all-good personality of Godhead. So one who is hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, they're developing detachment from the material world and they're preparing themselves more and more to enter into the eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the process of bhakti yoga. But one has to cultivate that mood of detachment now. One cannot wait till the time of death, or one cannot wait till everything is taken away. Prabhupada talks about one grain merchant. He's sitting on the side selling his grains, and he's there. All of a sudden, a big wind comes along and just takes his grains and blows it up into the sky. And while they're going up to the sky, he says, "My dear Lord, please accept my offering." What do you say? Baba said, "It's too late. When Krishna takes it away, you can't offer it. You have to offer it now, because if you don't offer it at this time, then when it comes to time to really offer it, you're not ready. You're not ready." So detachment and cultivation of knowledge simultaneously are included within devotional service. But at the same time, we have to be very, very careful, because it's easy. Material world is what we can say. It is very dangerous. One can again become attached to anything in this world. And Prabhupada says just a pinch of desire will force one to take birth again in this material world. Of course, you might say, "Well, why? You know, I've executed devotional service all my life, even though I'm not completely free, I'll get a very good position in my next life." And that's nice, and that is also according to scriptures. But Prabhupada also goes on to say that whatever kept you from making it in this life will also be there in the next. So there's no guarantee that you'll make it in the next life either. So therefore one has to cultivate complete absorption and detachment, see the absorption in Krishna consciousness and detachment from material life. And even if Krishna brings us back into the material world to engage in devotional service, that is his will. He can do that. Because the devotee also prays, "Janmani, Janmani, Ishvare, Bhavate, Bhakti, Ahai, Tuki, Twayi." And I don't aspire for liberation, but still one should aspire for pure devotional service. And then whatever Krishna does, if Krishna brings one back into the material world to engage in devotional service, then that is perfect. The devotee is satisfied. The devotee is happy to serve Krishna in any situation. But one should not somehow or other cultivate devotional service up to the last attachment, but can't give up with that last attachment. Because even one little attachment is so dangerous that it can bring all your other attachments back again. Material life is like that. If there's something left, then that whatever's left can snowball the other way, and one can go back again. So one cannot make a deal with Krishna. One has to give up everything. And how do we do that? Is this ayabilasita sunya jnana kamarana vritam anukulena Krishna silam bhakti uttama. And one has to try to serve Krishna for the pleasure of Krishna and the pleasure of Krishna's devotees. That's the ultimate principle in cultivating our mood of devotional service with Krishna. It's based around two principles: pleasing Krishna and pleasing Krishna's devotees. That's basically the essence of Krishna consciousness. How to serve the Lord for the Lord's pleasure, how to serve the Lord, how to serve the Lord's devotees in such a way that the Lord's devotees benefit by your service. That's where we focus our activities on, how to please the Lord and His devotees. Okay, so today is also the appearance day of Srila Narottam Das Thakur and to speak about Srila Narottam Das Thakur is beyond my qualifications to speak about this great personality. But for the purpose of honoring this great soul, I'll try to say a few words in honor of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. His life was glorious. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sometimes, without any cause or apparent cause, would just call out the name of Narottam, 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 in great happiness and great joy and great ecstasy. And one time, his devotees asked, "You call out this name of Narottam, but who is Narottam? We don't know this person." Lord Chaitanya said, "Kirtan is my heart. Kirtan is my heart. And someday one great personality will come and he will bring kirtan in such a wonderful way." So Narottam Das Thakur, he appeared right after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was born in a family of royalty. His father was a king, Krishna Dutt. His mother's name was Narayani. And he had one brother, Purushottama Dutt. And he was born in a very wealthy family. When he was born as a little child, he was always very quiet. Like a lot of times children, they cry. That's the way they express themselves. They cry, whatever their needs are. But he would never cry. He was always, as a baby, he was seemingly very peaceful. Would never complain, never cry, even as a baby. His parents took him to an astrologer to get his birth chart. The astrologer said, "This great soul has entered into this personality, your son." And so after 1 year, I believe it was, they were performing a one ceremony called the grain-giving ceremony, and Krishna Dada was a king. He invited all the people from the neighboring villages. It was a big, big mahotsava, big ceremony. They all came. And he performed he arranged a beautiful ceremony for the grain-giving ceremony. And there was one priest there. So the ceremony was about to begin, and everything was in place. So when it came to give the grains to Narottam Das, when they wanted to place the grains in his mouth, he refused. He refused to take it, which is very inauspicious. And everybody was, especially his parents, they were so worried, they didn't know what to think. So everyone was worried. It's not taking the grains. This is very inauspicious. Finally, there was one sadhu there, one holy man. He says, "You have to give him a Mahaprasad. He's not going to take this." So they went to the temple. They offered some bhoga to the Lord, and then they came back and they offered it to him, and they gave it to him, and he ate it. Not only did he eat it, he ate all of it. And then his father vowed that throughout his life he would only give him food that was offered to the deity. So even at 1 year old, at the age of 1 year old, He was exhibiting the qualities of a great soul. This is Srila Narottam Das Thakur. Srila Prabhupada glorified Narottam Das Thakur in so many ways, but one specific way that he included one of his most important bhajans as part of our morning program, Sri Guru Vandanam, the glorification of the spiritual master, which was written by Srila Narottam Das Thakur in glorification of Srila Lokanath Das Goswami. Prabhupada loved that particular expression, not only because of its devotion, but because of its complete conclusion of all Vedic scriptures. All his writings, all his songs, and all his expressions of devotional service were in complete, what we say, siddhanta of all Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada included that song in glorification of the spiritual master. Srila Narottam Das Thakur was a disciple of Srila Lokanath Das Goswami. When he arrived in Vrindavan, Lokanath Das Goswami was there. And he came, he was in deep meditation. He came to greet little Narottam. He placed his foot upon the head of Narottam Das Thakur, welcoming him to Vrindavan. At that time, within his heart, Narottam Das Thakur accepted Lokanath Das Goswami as his spiritual master. But Lokanath Das Goswami was very much detached from the principle of guruship. In his natural humility as a great Vaishnava, he never considered himself qualified to accept disciples. So he made a vow never to accept anyone as his disciple. But Narottam Das Thakur was so detached, so attached to Lokanath Das Goswami that he had given his heart and mind and he could not take it away. And so many times he approached Lokanath Das, but Lokanath Das would say, "I'm sorry, but I'm not qualified. I cannot become your spiritual master." But Narottam Das Thakur didn't give up. In fact, even Lord Chaitanya appeared in the dream of Lokanath Das Goswami and told him to accept him. In fact, he appeared twice. Second time, he took the dream significant. But Narottam Das Thakur would do service for Lokanath Das Goswami every day. When Lokanath Das Goswami would go out to the woods to take care of nature, and then he would leave and go on to do his service and his bhajan, little Narottam would come and he would clean the area so nicely that when Lokanath Das would come the next day, he couldn't even tell it was being used. And this went on for some time. Finally, he said, he was thinking, "Who's coming here? Who's doing this? Who's coming to clean up after?" So he decided to hide and see. And then he noticed, after he left, Narottam Das Thakur would come with his own hands and clean up everything. And he was shocked. He ran out. He said, "What are you doing? You are a prince. You're born in a royal family. You shouldn't be... This activity is way beneath your dignity and your position." Narottam Das Thakur would, with folded hands and with great humility in his heart, considered that he begged Lokanath Das Goswami to accept his service, and he considered that the greatest honor. How can we understand such humility in great Vaishnavas? It's not easy, or it's not easy. It's inconceivable to understand such humility in those who are on a very high spiritual platform. Of course, Radhanath Maharaj was saying that actually humility is the basis of Krishna consciousness. It's the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Without humility, one cannot traverse the path of devotional service successfully. But that humility that is born of pure devotional service, that has no regard for any one's self-interest at all, that is very hard to understand. That one is willing to, not willing, one is eager to accept any situation for the service of the Lord and to express one's loving devotion. So this was Srila Narottam Das Thakur. And finally, with the encouragement of Lord Chaitanya's appearance in the dream, he initiated Narottam Das Thakur. And that was his only disciple. That was his only disciple. And so many wonderful stories of the life of Narottam Das Thakur. First, one of my favorite stories is how when Lord Chaitanya, after calling out the names of Narottam Das, went bathing in one river, the Padma River, and when he went bathing in the river became very turbulent. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya invested within the river his own Krishna prema. And the deity of the river appeared to the Lord. The Lord told that someday a great soul will come and bathe in your waters, and I have invested my own pure devotion within your waters. When that person comes, you give him that Krishna prema. You place it within his body. And she responded, "How will I know who that is?" And the Lord explains that just as I bathe in your rivers became turbulent, so also when he bathes, the same turbulence will happen. And Narottam Das Thakur, he somehow or other, his life is similar to Raghunath Das Goswami in the sense that his parents were always keeping him somewhat under control. They wanted him to get married, and they wanted him to take up his position as being the prince after his father departed. They wanted him to follow the family line perfectly. But he had no interest for these things. Finally, his father was called away on business, and he somehow or other convinced his mother to let him go. And he went, and finally he left. And he came to that Padma River, and then when he bathed in that river, and at that time the river became very turbulent. And Narottam Das Thakur's bodily color was somewhat darkish. But upon bathing in the river, his body became golden. Became the color of Lord Chaitanya's body. So Lord Chaitanya invested with him his own prema bhakti within the body of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, and was it Duki Krishna Das, later to become Shamananda? They were close friends. They traveled together. One of the first book distribution parties after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance. After Srinivas Acharya arrived in Vrindavan, hoping to get the association of all the great Vaishnavas and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and being disappointed in so many ways, he finally got the association of Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami, who gave him an assignment to travel and to take all the works of the Goswamis and to have them recopied from Vrindavan, to take them up to, I believe it was Jagannath Puri. We're going there on their way to Puri. And so the three of them, they met in Vrindavan and became very close friends. And they traveled together. Of course, that's a very, very long story. I don't know how much time we have. But at one point, the books were stolen by the king of the province named King Birhambir. And Srinivas Acharya sent Duki Krishna Das, who was Shamananda, to Utkala to preach, and he also sent Narottam Das Thakur to Ketarigram, which was in the area of his birth, to preach. And then there was that famous Ketarigram festival later on. Of course, that's later on in his life, when he met Janava Devi and they arranged this wonderful festival, installing six forms of Krishna deities, and having a wonderful, wonderful festival. Thousands of devotees had come from all over the land of Bharatvarsha, from Puri, from Vrindavan, from everywhere, wherever the devotees were staying and preaching, they came to this wonderful festival. And Narottam Das Thakur displayed his expertise in kirtan and had a very, very powerful kirtan. It's described, I remember Radhanath Maharaj describes this, how he led the kirtan so sweetly, so melodiously, and so softly, just chanting with kartals. And there were so many devotees there in kirtan with mridangas. He led so slowly, so sweetly, gradually, gradually, gradually. The kirtan was building and building and building and building, and soon the mridangas came in and all the other instruments, and soon it became more and more and more and more ecstatic. And at one point the kirtan was so ecstatic and so tumultuous that everyone was lost in complete ecstasy of devotion. And at that point in the kirtan, a miracle happened. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and many, many of his personal associates who had already left the world, because this particular festival was 50 years after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya. It was the first Gaur Purnima festival that being held in honor of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 50 years later. And in that kirtan, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Dvaitacharya, the entire Panchatattva, and many, many of Lord Chaitanya's associates, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Mukunda Sakar, who else? Oh, Murari Gupta, and Haridas Thakur, many of the associates of Lord Chaitanya appeared in that kirtan, and everyone saw them. It was like they had never left. The kirtan became so ecstatic when everyone saw Lord Chaitanya. Actually, Prabhupada says that when the kirtan is offenseless, when there is a fenceless kirtan, Lord Chaitanya is dancing in that kirtan. So what does it mean, a fenceless kirtan? When everyone is in the mood of chanting and dancing enthusiastically with a desire to glorify the Lord. Sometimes kirtans can get a little bit, variegated in their expressions in terms of dancing and chanting, and that's all very nice, and we all like to exhibit our own enthusiasm. We should never lose the focus of what is kirtan. It's easy to get into doing it for show, or to exhibit one's own false ego. One has to be very careful not to, and it's easy for that to enter into, but one should always, that I'm dancing for the pleasure of the Lord, I'm chanting for the pleasure of the Lord, I'm chanting for and dancing for the pleasure to inspire other devotees also to take part in kirtan. So that is actually the proper mood of kirtan. It's the proper mood of kirtan. And that makes kirtan so wonderful. And then Lord Chaitanya personally appears. Maybe even Narada Muni appears. We were hearing yesterday how Narada Muni, he comes also, playing on his veena, and takes part in the functions that are completely, what we say, in pure devotional service. So that kirtan in Kateri Gram was one of the highlights of Narottam Das Thakur's preaching, because so many devotees were inspired by that festival, and so many devotees understood the quality of Narottam, and from then his preaching became so powerful. After that, so many others fell at the feet of Narottam Das Thakur and accepted him as their spiritual master or as a great soul who was a representative of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's a very special personality, and today is his appearance day. I know I don't want to take too much time because we just had a wonderful festival yesterday, and I know many of us have to get back to our regular duties. So I'll stop here. And let's see, is there any questions? Any comments on anything? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Narottam Das Thakur Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki.